And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, the Grost crew, it's that day, the Grost crew joins forces with Shem Syndulla, father of Hera in Clone Wars legend. But will his thirst for revenge and fractioned relationship with his daughter cost the Rebels a victory? There will be Kanan meeting the in-laws, Slingshot Jedi, and Hera has to face her past. We're talking homecoming this week. How you doing, Krius?
Face your past, Hera. Face it.
Say
everybody's got to face their past in Rebels.
Do it.
There'll be more past facing coming up, too.
I'm just happy to be doing this podcast. Listeners, you don't know, like, we had to reschedule, like, 3 times to do this show. Because, like, I had a family thing came up, and then, like, Chris had a work thing came up, so we haven't watched this in a week, and I wrote this a week ago. I honestly don't remember anything I wrote in this outline.
Excellent.
I don't remember anything. I don't remember any of my notes other than,
face,
like,
your past, Hope.
Do it. Yeah, so, like, it's going to be one of those episodes where I'm just going to be like, oh, I wrote that. Awesome. So, do you have a good week?
Yeah. It's been an exhausting summer. I've been busy and just generally always doing something this summer, which I guess is ideal.
Yeah.
And I'm getting ready. I've got one more day of work between now and when I go to New York City to Dario's for the picnic, which will be all over and done with by the time you're hearing this.
Tell everybody I said hi.
I will.
Yeah, I've had a really busy summer, too. It's been a long week for me as well, and I'm 2 weeks away from going to see the Game Grumps up in North Carolina. I'm staying with Megan, and me and Billy are going to go see Game Grumps. And then 10 days after that is Dragon Con, so I'm getting ready for that, too. I gotta order some...
Are Game Grumps, is that a podcast? Are they gonna be doing, like, a live podcast or something?
They're a Let's Play on YouTube. They're the guys that send you the Yoda jokes.
Yes.
Yeah, but they do a live show where they play, like, live on stage and stuff like that. And
so it's almost like a live podcast, basically.
Yeah,
they're doing
much.
Their thing live in front of an audience. That sounds like fun.
It is. And the Atlanta show sold out in, like, 20 minutes, so me and Billy were super bummed. And then I noticed at work one day, they still have shows for the Raleigh tickets. And that's where Megan lives. And so, like, I called up Billy, and I was like, Billy, there's still tickets in Raleigh. You want to fucking go? She was like, yeah, let's go. Yeah, let's do it. And so, like, I bought the tickets, and then I was like, fuck, I should have called Megan. And so I called Megan, and I was just like, hey, Megan, can me and Billy come visit you in August? And she was like, yeah, that'd be really nice. I'm like, good, we're not coming for you. So we're going to spend Saturday with Megan and then go see the show on Sunday and then come back on Monday. And I'm very excited because this is the last time they're doing their Mario Party tour. They're going to change up their tours for next year. So I'm really excited to see the show because I've never seen Game Grumps live and I've always wanted to. And me and Billy are just excited for it.
I'm just excited that a popular podcast can go and tour around the country like a rock band.
I still wouldn't define them strictly as a podcast. I mean, they're a Let's Play, but I guess
Whatever. So, some guys who sit around on either YouTube or an audio thing and film and or record themselves. they're doing stuff that, like, I mean, there's a lot of podcasts that are live play sort of thing. They just do it on YouTube, but it's the same idea, you know.
I do often see Let's Plays as podcasts, but it's just, it's not like critical role. What's that really? The Adventure Zone. It's not, I was way off. It's not like the Adventure Zone where it started as a podcast or Welcome to Night Vale that turned into like a big touring show.
Right. So. No, it's. But what I'm saying, it's a bunch of nerds sitting around doing their nerd thing.
Yeah.
And now they can go on tour like a rock band.
So, I agree. Like it. It's a very busy summer and we're both tired, so you just want to get into the episode?
Let's do it. Let's just get it over with, Hope.
Yeah, God. And, like, me writing this podcast, like, the outlines for this, I had to do it in, like, four different settings. Like, because usually I can just sit down on a Sunday afternoon, sit down and write out the podcast outlines fine. But, like, this episode, I had to, like, do it in, like, four different sittings. And then we had to reschedule this episode multiple times. So, like, this was just, like, the cursed episode of us making this episode.
We'll find out.
Yeah, so like I when I watched it was so disjointed because I was just watching it like in like 7 minute parts. So anyway, here we go. Homecoming is the 31st episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on February 17th, 2016. It was written by Stephen Melching and directed by Bosco Ng. And I can already see, and now I'm remembering my all caps that I wrote in this section. Some extra information for you. Robin Atkins-Downs reprised his role from Clone Wars by voicing Shamps and Doola. Corey Burton reprises his role of Gobi Glee, who was in the Clone Wars Season 1 episode Liberty of Ryloth. He was also the voice of Count Dooku in Clone Wars. Catherine Tabor reprised her role as Numa from the Clone Wars. She was also the voice of Padme in the series. All right, y'all. Y'all ready for some feelings? Because you know me, and you know how I feel about clone feelings, and oh my god. So Numa, and I hope you guys did your homework. I just now remember I said, go back and watch Innocence of Ryloth. I said, that was your homework. So Numa was the little girl in the Clone Wars episode, Innocence of Ryloth. You know, my 10 for 10 episode of season 1 of Clone Wars that I love a lot. There are several callbacks in Numa's costume and armor to that episode. For one, the yellow and white clone armor is received from Ghost Company. So she's wearing like white and yellow clone armor on one arm. It's from Ghost Company, who was Obi-Wan's troops in that episode, and it's what they wore on Ryloth. It's the same kind of armor that Waxer and Boyle wore. And Waxer and Boyle were the clones of that episode. On the arm of the armor, in Erebesh, is the word Boyle. On her vest, there is a faded purple Tuca doll patch, the same color Tuca doll that Waxer gives her in the episode. And a friendly reminder, when Waxer died back in the Umbara arc, he had a picture of Numa painted on his helmet, because these clones are still killing me 10 fucking years later. I hate them, but I love them so much. I miss Waxer and Boyle, and they never got their happy ending with Numa, and they never got to be their Nera, which is brother in Twi'lek Ease or whatever. Those stupid-ass boys, I love them. The Imperial Light Carrier ship design is based on artwork by Doug Chiang and Troy Vigil, created for the first edition of The Essential Guide to Vehicles and Vessels, where it was originally a Rebel ship. The triangular shape of their vehicle put it more in line with the Imperial aesthetic, hence why it was reused here. When Hera gets flustered, her natural Twi'lek accent comes through, answering a long-standing fan question as to why she didn't sound like other Twi'leks seen in the Clone Wars. They talked about it in Rebels Recon from a fan question. Pablo Hidalgo explained that Hera left Ryloth at a very young age, so she picked up a more of a not Twi'lek accent. But when she's around other Twi'leks, it comes out more. In the original script, there was a reference to a song that Gobi Glee composed called The Ballad of Shamps and Doola. It was written for an online webcomic that accompanied the first season of Clone Wars. The reference to this song was cut later scripts for the episode. In Rebels Recon for this episode, they talked about how Sham has been fighting his whole life. He defeats one enemy and then finds another. They describe him as a zealot and that he's not that he's not the once wise noble leader that we saw back in Clone Wars. The war never ended for him once the Empire took over, and he'll do whatever it takes to win. They go on to talk about Hera's relationship with her father. Hera saw a vaster problem in the galaxy, while Shan was only focused on Ryloth. And they also had a discussion about Kanan with Freddie Prinze Jr., who is Kanan's voice actor. And they were talking about Kanan and Shan's relationship. And Freddie Prinze Jr. flat out says that Kanan and Hera have feelings for one another, so I died. And so for Kanan, it felt like meeting his girlfriend's father, and I'm all paraphrasing this, by the way. And they also talked about how it was a connection to the Clone Wars, because Kanan's master, Depa Bialba, was the Padawan of Mace Windu. And, oh my god, I just, like, lost all my spots. My brain is not working. Mace fought with Sham. Mace was Depa's master, who is Kanan's master, and they all fought in the Clone Wars, and Kanan's just like, cool, we have that connection. I don't know how to read anymore. How you doing, Yoda?
Yoda knows how to read between the lines.
Yoda, I need help this week. I am a mess today.
A question for Yoda?
I do. So this question comes from me, because I saw the opportunity to theme it in the episode. And my question for you this week is, in honor of Kanan meeting Hera's dad, did you ever have to meet the parents with someone you were dating? And how did it go?
Always goes good. Yoda makes good impression. Very good impression.
I bet you make really good impressions with the moms.
Mom and Dad use Jedi mind trick.
Oh, that's not cool.
Daughter does not have to come home by 10 o'clock. Midnight will be fine.
That's not cool, Yoda.
Yoda is tall and handsome. Much money Yoda has. Much money.
Yoda is 200, not 600.
Kiss Yoda. Handsome prince he will turn into.
You're bad.
Many delicious dinners Yoda enjoyed.
You will give me the last breadstick, yes?
You will pass the salt to Yoda.
I don't even know what to say.
Yoda comes to pick her up in 57 Chevy. Vroom vroom. Big back seat.
I mean, that's great, Yoda. I'm glad you're sexually active.
Going to the drive-in, Yoda is.
You know, I realize I've never been to a drive-in, and I've always wanted to go to one for fun. Are they fun?
They are fun.
Yeah, because I...
They don't make drive-ins like they used to back in the old days, which would be one gigun. That was the thing I loved about drive-in. One of the things that, I mean, the atmosphere is what drive-ins are all about, but the gigundous screen. But now what they do is they make a bunch of, like, it's like a cinemaplex. They're like screens the size of a side of a barn instead of the size of a, you know, office building or something. So there's like 10 of them, but it's still fun. You know, I don't think people go to them to make babies like they used to. I think people go there now like family. They're more of a family thing.
Yeah, because I realized because Megan just got back from her honeymoon that she took 2 years later. And I was like, she was showing me pictures and stuff, and one of them was at a drive-in, and I was just like, I've never been to a drive-in. And there used to be one about 20 minutes down the highway from my house, but they tore it down and turned it into an actual movie theater. And I was just like really bummed, because I always wanted to go, and I've never been to one, and they seem like a really cool, like, little experience.
Yeah, they are. It's fun, because it's like, it's very American, because you're doing it all in your car. You know, you're eating in your car, and like up here, you could buy little, like, you would buy these little spiral things that you would light, and they would scare the mosquitoes off, supposedly. and, you know, there was a concession stand that was like a little crappy restaurant. You know, it was, there was a social scene involved with it. I think the space that drive-ins occupied got is being fulfilled by Netflix and chill these days.
Yeah. And I have a feeling it's more of like becoming like the experience of we're going to this thing that's different.
Yeah.
Well, Act One?
Act One.
Sorry, Yoda. Yoda, I'm sorry.
He just slunk off. Yeah, we just ignored him and he went away.
I know. I'm sorry, Yoda. I'm so out of it today.
He'll be back.
I know. So, Act One?
Don't worry about Yoda.
Let's see what I wrote in Act 1. Here we go. We open like we do in most episodes of this series, and the rebels are being shot at. They're getting supplies from another ship with the Imperials right on their tails. They're able to get the supplies, but Hera loses one of her pilots in the process, and they're able to escape into hyperspace. They call Commander Sato, explaining that they're not just losing ships, but they're losing pilots faster than they can replace them. With not base.
All your base are not belong to us.
I wrote with not base. They don't have a place to land their fighters.
You either have base or not base. There is no in between.
Schrodinger's base. Sato offers them.
Hey, I'm all about the base. All about the base. No rebels.
There's a rebel.
Oh, I'm gonna bow out now.
I just imagine like Darth Vader listening to that song. It's all about the base, about the base, no rebels.
Yeah, he's just flying over a rebel base, blowing it up.
I know. So anyway, Sato offers them a solution. There's a rebel cell with an Imperial carrier over the planet. If they can steal the carrier, then it could house all their fighters. And it's over Ryloth, Hera's home planet. And she says that she will talk to him, but she's not clearly happy about it. And she's struggling trying to make the call, but as she hits the button, we see her father, Sham Syndulla, Clone Wars veteran and hero, and they need to have a talk. Later, a ship arrives with the rest of the fleet, and Kanan is panicking. I wrote panicking internally, but he's also panicking externally as well. About how he looks, what he smells like. Does his hair look fancy? But not too fancy, because they're in a war, so he doesn't want to look like a pretty boy. He wants to look like righteously like nice. And like what to say to him. And Ezra is like, are you okay there, Dad? And Kanan's like, Dad! No, Dad! I mean, dads are great. Sham is a great dad, I hear. Stand up straight, Ezra! I have to look like I know what I'm doing as a Jedi, and I need to know what I look like I'm doing in what I'm doing in life. What is my life right now? I don't know. Also in this scene, when Kanan's panicking, if you look in the background just behind them, Zeb is just smiling at Kanan and like giggling to himself. He's just like looking at Kanan and smiling. And I just, when I noticed Zeb making that face at Kanan, I just started laughing. So it's a cool little moment in the background. So anyway, Sham comes onto the ship with Gobi and Numa! My Numa! She's all grown up and she is a woman now and I love her so much and she's still cute and adorable, and that's a big fucking wasp outside my window. I'm glad it's outside. Anyway, I still love her to this day, and Waxer and Boyle would be so proud of their little Nara Nara girl. Nara! Sham greets Kanan as a Jedi. Kanan nearly pees himself, and Hera rolls her eyes, and he also points at the wrong space kids while naming them. Sabine compliments Sham's tactics that she studied in the Imperial Academy, and Sham is like, oh, ho, 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 stop with the flattery, right, daughter? And Hera cold shoulders her dad and heads for the briefing. They make a plan to use the stolen TIE bombers, a stolen TIE bomber to get onto the hangar. One team will secure the hangar, and the other one will take over the bridge. And then they just jump to hyperspace, and Hera has a very, very practical plan to do all this. But Sham wants fire and brimstone. He wants the ship to fall from the sky so the entire planet can see it. He wants death to every Imperial, and he's just not being a really good team player in general. But Hera points out that if Shan was able to destroy the carrier this entire time, why hasn't he done it yet? Oh, daughter is rebellious to the daddy. And Kanan says that they all need to work together with all of their resources. Shan agrees to the plan, but his daughter Hera gives him a very questioning look like, that was too easy. Ezra is sitting with Hera in Chopper, and Ezra asks what's up with Hera's dad. Hera gives a lot of background that he was the hero of the Clone Wars, and when the Republic became the Empire, Shan started fighting them instead. When her mother was killed in the Resistance, Shan became more obsessed with saving Ryloth. Ezra asks if Shan thinks fighting is more important than family, but Shan comes in and cuts off their conversation and lets them know that the battle is about to begin. And Ezra makes sure that he gets the last word, telling Hera that nothing is more important than family to the little blueberry. And Ezra leaves. And now alone, Shan asks if Chopper is the same droid that she found back during the Clone Wars, and says that she should give half as much attention to Ryloth as she gives to Chopper. And he berates his daughter, saying that she focuses on the wrong things in life and that she's wasting her life in the rebellion. And Captain Space Mom Harrison Dula ain't gonna take that shit. She takes off her earrings and she takes off her goggles and her fucking French accent comes out. Because she's not gonna take that one sitting down. And she says that she's fighting to free everyone with the rebellion, not just one planet. And Shan only cares about Ryloth. And they leave. What'd you think of Act One? I think it's fun when I don't know when I forgot that I wrote, because I'm just like, oh, ha, that's funny.
Like a surprise.
I know, it's a surprise for me, just like it is with the listeners.
It's like meeting up with alternate universe Hope. Hope from the future.
I know.
Someday. I like seeing the fanboy Kanan. That's funny. It's different. It's similar but different to his reaction when he thought they were going to find what's her name, who was dead.
Yeah.
And he was more nervous with her because he didn't know this guy was. He knows this guy's alive and a hero, so he's just all like, here he comes.
And I have that as a note too, because it's Kanan meeting his in-laws, and there's like no amount of Jedi training to ever prepare him ever for meeting his girlfriend's dad, and. Like, there's a little moment where, like, he's introducing the space kids, and he points at each of them, and he gives them all the wrong names. I think, like, Ezra was Sabine, Zeb was Ezra, and, like, Sabine was Zeb or something like that. Like, he points at each of the space kids and names them all wrong. But it's I love it, because there's, like, no amount of training that Kanan could ever have to get ready to meet his father-in-law.
Here's a little dating advice for Kanan. Daughters don't like it when you like their dad and their dad likes you too much. they don't want you to be like, oh, your dad's really cool. You know, they don't want that.
I think my dads are cool.
Well, maybe you, but not in my experience. Sometimes they don't like. Well, it depends. It depends how serious the relationship is. But early on in the relationship, a lot of times, especially those rebellious girls.
Well
let's see. What also, else?
If the dad likes the son in the early part of the relationship, then it opens it up later for trouble. But if it's a much longer relationship, then and they like each other, I think that's a better.
Yeah, well, you got to get along. You got to get along with the dad. You know, they want you to get along, but they don't want you to be best friends. Anyway. Murder droid. Murder bot. Chopper is ready to murder Cham Syndulla. No problem. States it plainly. And my only other note I have two actual notes, and they're all, like, language notes. For one is, I think you mentioned it either last episode or back a little while. Is Cham's voice the same? Is he the same voice actor as Hondo?
No, they're two different voice actors.
They sound very similar. He reminds me of Hondo a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that accent isn't just generally a sort of space accent. And my other one is is Hera's accent comes out, and it reminds me of a roommate I had who was Jamaican, and he would but spoke, you know, perfect clear English, but when he was on the phone with his mom, his Jamaican accent would just like boom, or when his mom came to visit, the Jamaican accent was just boom right back.
Yeah,
and he didn't even know he was doing it.
It was so natural. They talked about that in like in a lot more detail in Rebels Recon, where I just paraphrased it, where it's like, because Hera left at a young age, so she picked up like a more of a normal, like, I guess it's not normal, like more of a like a Coruscant-y like accent, like where
right,
it's more
right.
like it sounds American. There's two accents mainly in Star Wars, American and British, and everybody else is different. And so they were talking about how when you've been away for so long, you tend to pick up certain accents. But when you return home, like your old way of speaking, like almost always comes out. And I really agree with that, because like I don't have much of a Southern accent. But when I get like pissed or excited or like or something like that, like I can have a Southern accent.
Right, right.
It just comes out of me. And I loved that moment that Vanessa Marshall chose that, because it wasn't in the Rebels Recon. I think it was in a Comic-Con panel after season 2 came out, and she was talking about it. It was a choice that like her and Dave made together. That she wanted to have that. I don't even think it was originally written in the script, but don't quote me on that, because I'm trying to remember from something like 3 years ago. she and Dave worked together to find that moment. And Vanessa Marshall actually speaks fluent French, so she knows how to do a French accent. So it's just a really cool moment to kind of have that like touchback of like Hera's family and like her culture, and like this is probably how she sounded like as a child when her mother was still around and stuff too.
Yeah, it's a nice touch. Well, that's all I got for part one.
All right, so now let me read all the notes that I can remember. I do remember, I actually wrote this note before I started the episode, before I ever watched the episode, was I just miss the Inquisitors. They haven't been in the last 5 episodes, and we still need to get into next week's episodes before they're like in the like the last like 3 or 4. And it just kind of goes back to what we were talking a lot about in season 1, where it's hard to take the Inquisitors really seriously at times, because they're not really a focus. We don't really know a lot about them. And after season 2, they're going to completely vanish, and we're never going to talk about the Inquisitors ever again for the rest of the show after season 2. And it's just a story that I just wish they kept throughout the entire series. I still stand by what I said back in Fire Across the Galaxy, where Fire Across the Galaxy was the season 1 finale. I think whatever the season 1 finale was, about how I thought it would have been a good choice if the Grand Inquisitor had survived, and having like these through villains the entire way through, having like the Inquisitors clashing with people like Thrawn. And it's not a really well developed like story, which sucks, because I really love the Inquisitors. I really, really love them, but they just don't handle them well at all, because we haven't had them for about half the season. It's been 5 episodes. We're not going to get them until the week after next. And that's half the season. And how are we supposed to take these 2 seriously when they're barely in the show?
I'm going to not quite be the exact opposite of you, because I like the Inquisitors. I don't have a problem with the... I have minor quibbles with the Inquisitors, and it all like goes into your point that you just made about it's hard to take them seriously. But I didn't even think of this till I saw your note. When they're not there, I don't think about them. I'm happy with the characters. And I think, to me, Darth Vader showing up pretty much like took all the piss out of the Inquisitors for me, because if Darth Vader's going to be in the mix, then these guys are just chumps, you know? And especially after Darth Vader came down and just like wrecked the place first thing. So yeah, when I read that note, I was like, oh yeah, the Inquisitors haven't been in the last 5 episodes. I didn't even notice.
Yeah, because I was starting to notice, and I actually had to look it up, and I was, like, counting, like, when was the last time they were here? And it was when we had the episode with Sean, like, that was the last time the Inquisitors are here, and they're not going to be back until the week after next, because next week is the big gay ship Cal Zeb episode that I can't wait for. And then they're going to come back.
The good thing about the way we're recording this week is it's not next week, it's tomorrow. Technically next week.
Yeah, well, more for like when the episodes are being released next week.
So
my next note is, I think one of my favorite things about Rebels is showing how they're just piecing together the rebellion the best they can, because they didn't just like magically have ships. It wasn't like they were like, oh, we just have these X-Wings laying around. Like, they had to still beg, borrow, and cheat their way through this war. And I think that's like, Rebels does a really good job of showing that, and showing that, you know, they lose pilots, and that's a big deal, because they don't have just, like, it's not like the Republic where they can just, like, go and turn the army and go, oh, we'll just send the 7th platoon to you. There is no 7th platoon. They're just people, and they're beg, borrowing, stealing, cheating their way through this war. And I think Rebels does just such a good job of showcasing that. So they've done a lot of good, like, subtle Hera work in the opening episodes, in the opening act of this episode. Because, like, Hera's a very emotional person. Like, she's very, like, she smiles, she laughs, she gets angry and stuff like that. But, like, when Ryloth came up and her father came up, we saw kind of a different side of Hera where she kind of, like, clamped down. Like, she became, like, suddenly, like, very reserved and, like, was kind of, like, hiding her emotions a little bit. And we see her struggling to call her father. Like, she's leaning on the counter, like making herself push this button. And it was just, like, a very nice piece of, like, visual animated storytelling, just to show, like, instead of the opposite of, like, how emotional Hera usually is, like, she just kind of, like, clamps down. And she's like that for a lot of the episode. Like, she's very, like, cut off from everybody, because everyone's like, Sham, we want to hear your war stories, and she's, like, shutting the door on them. And so it's just a very nice different way of showing us, like, how Hera is feeling through lack of showing us emotions versus when we normally see her being very open.
I like that they did it more subtly. Like, I mean, that's the thing about Rebels, theoretically, as a kid's show, they could have just had her reverting to childhood and, like, had her and her dad squabbling and stuff, but it's handled in a very subtle manner for a kid's cartoon, especially, whereas you see that she's, you know, she and her father are airing grievances, but they're also both, you know, battle hardened and doing their job. And, you know, she knows her dad's getting her goat, but she's not going to let it, you know, take her away from her position. Although you see the cracks. So it's just very well done.
Yeah. I just love, like, the general trend of, like, kid shows nowadays. Cause, like,
They're a lot more emotionally complex than they used to be.
Yeah, like, I just finished watching season 3 of She-Ra, and Catra in that show is just the best character, like written-wise.
Is this a newer version of She-Ra, or
yeah,
the
80s? Yeah, this is okay.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say it didn't sound like you were watching the 80s version.
No. I'm talking about, like, the new reboot version. And the way they handle Catra so well, like, she's not my favorite character, but she's easily the best written character, where they give you, like, make her so sympathetic. They show you that she's been mentally and emotionally abused for years, like, ever since she was a child. She's been abused, and she is a victim of abuse. And so they really justify, like, why she's feeling the way she is, but they write her so compelling to where, like, in this last season, she was willing to destroy the world just to be vindicated in her abuse. And it's done so well. And, like, she's both a villain, but you absolutely understand why she's doing what she's doing. But it everything's, like, so emotionally complicated. And it's just like, wow, like, this is what children's television is now. And I'm just watching.
I think they realize that kids are smarter and more sophisticated than they're given credit for a lot of times. It's one of the things that's always bothered me through my whole life, is I hate when people condescend to little kids, you know, as if they're not going to understand things. And if they don't understand things, you can explain them to them. But I hate when people treat little kids like they're little dummies, you know?
Yeah, even though they are.
They're not, but I mean, they're dummies as in they don't have the experience of adults, but they can understand much more complex things. And I think there's been a lot of steps forward in the psychology and writing of these shows. I think there's a lot more thought put into them than that there was in the old days, when it was mostly not that Rebels is not guilty of being something that's partially there to sell toys, but not as much as He-Man was, you know, in the 80s was everything was a toy line first and then a cartoon. And with maybe a little message at the end that's like, don't do drugs and pick up garbage.
Yeah, I started thinking of a podcast I would love to do with you, but neither of us have the time to do it. And it's called something like Hope Makes Chris Watch Cartoons. And it's a weekly podcast, but like there's a different show every week. So it's like the first week is Avatar. The second week would be Steven Universe. The third week is Gravity Falls. And the fourth week is the current She-Ra. And like, I want to do this show with you so fucking bad.
Well, maybe we can maybe we can do quarterly specials or something like that. That sounds actually like a lot of fun.
I know.
And I also need an excuse to watch all of those cartoons.
Because I always tell you about these shows, and I'm like, I just want to talk to you about them, but I can't. And especially something like Avatar, where Filoni got his start. And like Avatar was really like the early kickoff to like the revolution of like animated shows now.
Right.
And I would love to do that, but neither of us have the time. So, listeners, do you guys
throw it on the list of piles of potential podcasts?
I know.
We'll get that one listener who's worth like $500 million, who's just like, I'll just send Hope and Chris $1 million and let them do all the podcasts they want and they don't have to work.
Please. Please. That would be great. Anyway.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah. My next little note is it was just nice to get a little bit of Chopper backstory that, like, you know, like she's had this droid since the Clone Wars and she's been taking care of it, because that just gives a like a little relationship between like Hera and Chopper that they've been together that long. So that was a nice little thing. And I've been kind of the last note, like few episodes, like noting about how like Ezra can be a little protagonist-y this season because they're just kind of like inserting him in places and stuff like that. But this is kind of the episode where I wish him and Hera had like a little bit more time, because he's coming off like he had a very loving family growing up. He's coming off his finding out that his parents are dead, and so he probably can't really understand fully what it's like to have a bad relationship with a parent. And I kind of just wish there was just like a little, like, I wish Sham hadn't walked in when he did, because I would have liked about another.
I don't know if they have a bad relationship, but it's definitely a strained and complicated one.
Yeah. And so I kind of wish they just spent like a touch more time on that. I think that would have been a kind of a neat conversation, because we don't always, again, in shows like this, like we don't always see when people have bad relationships or strained relationships with family members. The only, like, coming to my head right now is the current run of One Day at a Time, the reboot of One Day at a Time, when Elena has a bad relationship with her father, and they're very strained throughout the course of the show, and I'm so happy that One Day at a Time is saved too, so please go watch it. It's currently on Netflix, but yeah, like, I think that would have just been like a nice, like, extra, like, 20 seconds for them to have a little bit more of that conversation for Ezra, who has probably never kind of seen this sort of thing before. I just think it would have been nice to kind of craft that a little bit more. But that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
No.
All right. It's Act 2.
Act 2.
All right. Let's see into if I wrote in more typos.
Some more fighting going here.
Yeah. So, our heroes and Sham's team leave to start infiltrating the Imperial carrier. Everyone is crammed into a little TIE bomber and just kind of sitting there awkwardly. especially Kanan, who is now face to face with Sham. And Kanan is like, so, my Jedi grandpa, Wet Blanket Windu, spoke super highly of you, sir. And Sham's just like, oh, Wet Blanket Windu, I have stories. And he starts delving into his great Clone Wars stories, and Hera shuts the door on all of that nonsense. And Kanan slides over to his space wife after a few minutes, and he's like, Hera, I'm actually bonding with your dad. Isn't that great? And Hera is so done with this trip already. They arrive, and they start their plan. Hera signals two of her A-Wing pilots to come in and shoot the wings off her ship, so her TIE that she's flying looks like it's under attack and damaged. And they come into the carrier hot, and they crash land in the hangar bay. And as she's slowly getting up, Sabine notices a shit ton of explosives in Numa's bag and realizes the Twi'leks were never going to help the Ghost crew. Numa and Gobi stun the space kids while Sham does something that I'm sure every father wants to do at some point. Sham gets to stun his son-in-law, and he probably really enjoyed it. And Hera is pissed and shocked, and they tie her to the pilot's chair before kicking some Imperial ass outside of the ship. And she kicks Chopper awake, who frees her. She wakes up Kanan, who is like, why would my only potential parental figure shoot me? I'm a lovely person, Hera. And Kanan's like, Hera's like, I don't care right now. Because Space Mom doesn't take kindly to people shooting her space family. And she still plans to save the mission. And they're going to have to stop her dad, find a shit ton of bombs with the Twi'leks that the Twi'leks plan to plant. That's hard to say. They have to beat up the Imperials, and they have to somehow steal the carrier all in one day to complete her mission. Well, Sabine and Zeb go to find Numa and Gobi, and they're putting detonators on proton bombs, and all the rebels start shooting at each other until the Empire sends in some troops, and then they start fighting the Imperials, and then they go back to fighting each other. Well, Numa warns Sham that the rebels are awake and free. He wants to make sure that his daughter isn't with Numa, because he wants to deal with his daughter himself. Ezra, Kanan, Hera, and Chopper go to the bridge. And then Kanan and Ezra do this, like, really awesome, like, force slingshot thing where they're throwing themselves very quickly through the hallway to get through closing blast doors. And it's so cool. It's such a cool moment when they're just, like, force throwing each other down hallways to get through the doors. And they get to the bridge. Meanwhile, Sabine and Zeb are in a standoff with Numa and Gobi. Sabine has an idea, and the big purple Lasat Catman has the Catch-a-Mouse droid. Hera, Kanan, and Ezra take the bridge, and they hold the captain at blaster point. And Kanan wants Ezra to practice the Jedi mind trick on the captain. And at first, he fails, but with a little bit more push, Ezra successfully mind tricks the captain for the first time. I guess I don't have to sneeze anymore. And they make the captain call for abandoned ship and successfully take over the bridge. Back with Sabine and Zeb, Sabine has come up with a pretty great little plan. She programs the mouse droid to run off her wrist button thingy and drives it to Numa and Gobi, and then she shocks them with the mouse droid and stuns them. But Sham storms the bridge to stop the party. He has already disabled the hyperdrive, so no one is going anywhere. Blech. What do you think about two? I had to, like, sneeze in the middle of it, and then it went away, like, halfway through me reading, and I was like, I guess I don't have to sneeze anymore.
I got a few short notes. I like the design of the Imperial hangar ship. I think it's just a cool sort of utilitarian, what you would think that would look like. It's kind of neat.
You know, I never actually thought about an Imperial hangar ship until here, and I was like, that's true. They probably do need places in space to, like, plant their ships. Like, that's actually a cool idea.
Yeah, haul a bunch of ships around, sure. And I also had a note about the Jedi toss being really cool. My big note for this is Cham reminds me, not as extreme, of course, but he reminds me a little bit of Saw Gerrera.
I have that note in Act 3.
Oh, really? he definitely is gotten to a point of where he's just sort of like one obsessive note, you know, and he's not as, obviously he's not insane like Saw Gerrera probably was.
Yeah. And
not as messed up, but it's very similar. Because, like, I'm thinking he's got his plan. What was his plan for the Rebel crew? Like, his daughter and her boyfriend and these people that he's aligned with, but just not specifically aligned on the exact thing of a mission. So they crash that TIE bomber in there. They're not getting out with their TIE bomber. So he's going to blow up the ship. Is he just going to leave them to blow up? What was his plan for all the people that he's stunt, you know? Was he going to leave them on the ship to die or fend for themselves or whatever? It's just kind of weird, you know? You would have thought he would have done something like, you know, put him in an escape pod when they were unconscious and shot him out, you know?
Yeah.
That would have been probably the best thing to do, because then they couldn't mess with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a little Saw Gerrera like. It was pretty much just like, yeah, screw everything. I got my mission.
I have a note actress. I'm going to go ahead and talk about it now since we're talking about it, because I made the same note. And Sham actually kind of predates Saw, because... No, yep. He doesn't. What am I talking about? He came out and they're both...
Well, he predates Saw and Rebels.
Yeah, in Rogue One. That because, like, Saw wasn't a crazy person yet in the Alderaan arc. He was starting to get there, but he wasn't there yet. So he predates, like, crazy Rogue One Saw, which came before Saw was in Rebels. And, like, they're both, like, just worn-out battle guys from the Clone Wars. They're still fighting no matter what. Sham lost his wife. Saw lost his little sister, and which just that loss just pushed them even more. And I don't think Sham is as far gone as Saw, but he's right up there. And I had the follow-up
he's
note.
From different, he's from a different, like, Saw's background was a little more brutal in what happened, too, than Cham's. Not that Cham's wasn't brutal, losing his wife and everything, but.
Yeah. And this is kind of like I like with this kind of trend of these kind of stories that we're getting about these kind of dark heroes and like these rebels who will do whatever it takes, because it really kind of helps fleshes out like the good guys. Like we have Saw and Sham, but I'm also going to throw out Cassian Andor, because we see in Rogue One, like Cassian's a murderer. Like he flat out fucking murders people, but he's still technically a hero.
But he's not as Saw Gerrera. I think the line of distinction with Saw is Saw's been driven mad, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't try. He's paranoid. You know. He's even paranoid of Jin, when he meets her, and she's basically family, you know.
Yeah.
So.
But like, I like kind of how like they're fleshing out these like heroes, and not all of them are like the Lukes and the Leias and the Mon Mothmas.
Right.
Like, currently in the Afro comics, there's a group of rebels, and they're trying to figure out their way to build their own Death Star, or like their own kind of super weapon, because they know they know the Empire has the Death Star, and they're trying to build their own super weapon, but they're not telling Mon Mothma that they're doing this, because they know that she wouldn't approve.
She wouldn't like it, yeah.
Yeah, so like I kind of like I love having these kind of like darker heroes and
Star Wars Black Ops.
Yeah, like because like Sham, Saul, and Cassian are technically all good guys, but they're not the goodest guys. So it's a trend in these stories that I really like, because it just really helps flesh things out.
Yep, they remind me of like the French Resistance in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Or very any of the so. Hungarian resistance, any of the resistances during World War II, you know?
Yeah.
But those are all my notes.
Mm-hmm. So, I kind of feel bad for Kanan, because all he wants to do is impress Hera's dad. But something I noticed is that Sham is only interested in Kanan as a Jedi. Like, he refers to him as when he first meets Kanan, he's like, oh, you're the Jedi. And then, like, he kind of, like, when Kanan talks to him, he ignores him. But then when Kanan, like, brings up being a Jedi again, Sham's like, oh, yes, the Jedi. And it's kind of sad because, in a way, like, Sham is kind of using Kanan for his Jedi-ness, but he doesn't really care about him as a person. And whenever him and Gobi talk about him, it's always about him being a Jedi, not him being Kanan. And there's a lot of, like, very, like, specific phrasing and wording about how Sham and the other Twi'leks talk to Kanan. And I was like, that's so sad, because all he wants to do is be friends with Hera's dad.
He's a wannabe.
I know. My next note is Sham should have stunned Hera instead of tying her up, because if he would have actually stunned her and not just like kept her awake and tied her up, they probably would have got away with it.
Right. Yeah.
So
I don't think he could bring himself to do it, you know. And that was his undoing. His love for his daughter was his undoing.
Yeah.
Sort of, as we'll see in Act 3.
I have a note here that says, reason why Kanan is the best dad, because he's the complete opposite of Sham. I don't know. I just wrote that.
Yeah. I don't know if he's the complete opposite, but he generally is. Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about the forced slingshot that Kanan and Ezra do, but I have a follow-up note of, I had a laugh at the thought of them practicing that.
I was just going to say the practicing for that must have been hilarious.
I know, like them just like accidentally throwing each other like into the dirt or like into walls, or like them trying to practice on the ghost and like they just like throw each other at Zeb or something. So the practicing of that was probably hilarious, and I like to think about that a lot.
Yeah.
And then my last
That's not something they just pulled off on the fly there.
Yeah, you can tell that they practiced it too.
Yes.
Because he was like, because Kanan got set, and then he was like, "All right, Ezra, now." Yep. And then
yeah, it was like a circus act. It was like, "Hop, hop, 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 hey."
Yeah. So, but I love the idea of them practicing that and just like, because you know, Ezra at least once threw Kanan into like a lake or something on purpose.
If they would have pulled that off in a live action Star Wars movie, the audience would go berserko.
Yeah. Yeah. And my last note is, aw, Ezra's first successful Jedi mind trick. They grew up so fast.
His brain muscles finally strong enough.
I know. Because I remember that in season one, he tried a mind trick and he failed it. And so, like, Kanan had to do it for him. So, and I like that he still didn't get it perfect the first try, but he got it. So, Ezra's growing up. So, yeah. But that's all I had for Act 2.
All right. You ready to wrap this puppy up in cellophane?
Yep. Oh, no. We don't have puppies in cellophane. We put, like, cute little ribbons around them.
We'll wrap them up in ribbons.
Or, like boxes with little holes in it. You know, we don't actually, like, wrap a puppy.
Schrodinger's puppy.
Oh. So, Act 3?
Act 3.
Hera tries to reason with her father. If Sham destroys the ship, the Empire will just send another one. But she says if the rebels get it, it will help the bigger fight to stop the Empire. But Sham is pissed about the Empire taking Ryloth's wealth and selling their people into slavery. And as the Imperials are sending in their reinforcements, Hera makes a desperate monologue to plead with her father, and she tells him the truth about why she left. Sham inspired her during the Clone Wars. He didn't just rally a single village. Sham brought the entire planet together to free them from the Separatists. It made Hera want to fight for a bigger fight and free everyone, not just one planet. And everyone hears Hera's monologue, and Gobi and Numa rally to Hera. Sham doesn't like it, but he's outnumbered, and he puts his faith into his daughter. And Captain Space Mom Hera Syndulla goes into action. She puts all the kids on guns and commands her dad to instruct Chopper on how to fix the hyperdrive. The Space family takes out the reinforcements, but it's a very brief victory because a group of bombers are coming back, and the bombers shoot torpedoes at the carrier. Team Hera maneuver and shoot out the torpedoes, but more bombers are swooping in, and one torpedo knocks out the carrier's stabilizers, making it hard for Hera to drive the ship, and the carrier starts tilting and going down, and Hera is pulling with all of her might, trying to right the ship, and then her dad comes to help her, and Space Mom family is finally working together, and they right the ship, which is a metaphor for Sham and Hera starting to right their broken relationship. It's a metaphor! But oh no, it's not over yet. I know.
Relationship. I get it.
I know. They had to write the ship together. And they started it. I was like, that's a cool little metaphor written in there. But oh no, it's not over yet. And another big Imperial starship is looming nearby. And Ezra has a plan. Sham, Sabine, and Ezra load up a big proton bomb. Load up the big proton bombs and the Imperial bombers in the hangar. And they set the tie up with anti-gravity, and Ezra uses the force to push it out. And it drifts towards the big Imperial ship. And with one last blast from Sham, it shoves the bomber into the bomber tie with all the proton bombs on it into the big ship, and the big ship explodes, and it sends it toward Ryla the exact way that Sham wanted it to go. And it's a crash so big and bright that the entire planet can see it. With Chopper having fixed the hyperdrive, Hera successfully steals the carrier. And they all meet back with the Rebel fleet, who can actually land their ships somewhere until they can get a base. Sham is excited because the big-ass crash ship made it is making more and more Twi'leks on Ryloth join their cause. And he wants to speak to Hera alone. And Sham pretty much says that he's super proud of his daughter, and they hug, and he calls her Captain Stila, and they're starting to write the ship. The end.
I got a couple notes for this. There's a music cue in this that totally sounds like E.T. music for some reason. Hopefully it'll be in the music that I can find for this episode so I can play it now, but there's definitely a little E.T. theme going on there. And my other superficial note is just straightening out the ship is what fixes, does that fix the stabilizers on it? That was a little technically wonky to me. It's just like the stabilizers are gone. Oh, we got the ship straight. And all of a sudden they started working again. It's like, no, you'd probably have to repair or replace the stabilizers, but whatever.
It's a metaphor.
Whatever. You know,
they had to write the ship. It's a metaphor.
So in this is where this third act is where, I don't want to say this episode lost me, but where it lost points on the end. I think the reconciliation or whatever you want to call it between Cham and his daughter is a little bit superficial and all talk, and it kind of reminds me of Blood Sisters a little bit, where it's like oh daughter, all is hug, all is forgiven. No, it should have been Hera being just like, what the fuck is your problem? you need to, you know, the hugging part, I'm proud of you part should have come. I think there should have been a little more conflict from Hera's part where she's like, look, you know, you came in here and messed up our mission. We gave you everything you wanted in it. If you would have just followed along with us, we could have done it without you shooting my crew, you know, all that and blah blah blah. And then he needed to be taken down. He didn't need to forgive her. He did, but I mean, he was the one at fault in this episode.
I have two counterpoints to that. Well, one counterpoint and one point where I think they could have done it more done it better. The first one is, it's also her father, and it's hard to say stuff like that to your dad. So
yeah,
I think,
but after
she was,
he shoots her through and stuff like that.
I think she was just happy to have her dad recognize what she's doing. Because I get the feeling like he's never like once gave her an okay or a good job being in the rebellion.
Right.
But I also kind of wish they handled it the way they handled it in Resistance. In Star Wars Resistance, we got the episode with Yeager and his brother. And Yeager's brother is part of the reason that Yeager's family was killed. And so they had a moment where they started to reconcile, but Yeager flat out said, like, I don't forgive you, but I'm working on it.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And if they would have handled it like that, like, still had the whole, like, I'm proud of you, I see what you're doing here at the Rebellion, and have Hera just be like, thank you, like, I still don't really forgive you, but I'm working on it. Like,
right.
That would have actually
made
this episode really well.
You know, thank you, but you really need to think about what you did there and that you jeopardized this mission.
Resistance,
you jeopardized the life of my crew, you know, because you weren't listening to me or whatever. I don't know. I think there could have been a little more conflict in their resolution before, you know, with her, you know, because the whole thing is, you know, she really doesn't need to prove anything to her dad. She's
you want to prove things to your dad, because, like, you want your parents to be proud of what you're doing.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you obviously see she has some anger towards her dad, because in the early scenes with Kanan, when he's like, your dad's great, and she's just like, Yeah. You don't know him.
Yeah.
So, but that's all I really had for Act 3.
So, just a fun thing, because I mentioned Resistance. Star Wars Resistance Season 1 DVD is out on August 20th. After that, there's no excuses why you shouldn't be watching it, because it's a really good show. I understand not everybody has the Disney Channel and stuff like that, and stuff like it, but like, it's out on August 20th on DVD. You should go get it, because it's a really great show. All right, that's my soapbox. Lucasfilm, pay me. I do like, for my notes, I do like the debate that Hera and Sham are having, because they're both technically not wrong in either of their points of view. They're both fighting the same enemy. It's the difference between fighting, like, the small picture and the big picture. Like, Sham, like, if this was, like, you know, let's say it's, like, World War II. Let's look at World War II. Sham would be fighting for, like a city. Like,
his,
and, like,
village, yeah, his home, yeah, village.
Like, his village.
Yep.
Well, like, well, Hera is, like, fighting for, like, the whole allies. And Sham is like, well, you should be fighting for your village. This is important for your village. And she's going, like, this is important for everybody. So it's a very, like, interesting debate, because they're both really not wrong. It's just really the differences between the big picture and the small picture. And they're
I think when it comes down to Sham, it's his problem is he's letting his ego and his emotions keep him from the bigger picture. You know,
and
he's tied into his own, I have my people, you know, and this, rather than just like the general everybody that's getting crushed by the Empire.
And it's his trauma, too. Like, you know, he lost his wife. He's fighting.
Right.
They both lost something. But, like, Sham is fighting from a place of not letting that pain go and, like, harping on it, staying on it. While
he's
Hera
kind of
is
indulging his internal pain and motivations.
Yeah. And, like, Hera's using that pain the same way, too. But she's, like, working on it from, like, the bigger picture. And, like, she doesn't have the luxury, I think, of having, like, an ego, because she has to think of everybody. And, like, Sham's thinking of everybody on his planet, but he's not thinking of everybody in the galaxy.
Well, I just thought of this. Hera lost her mother, too, just like
he
lost his
wife. Yeah, that's
what I was
saying. They're both coming from a place of, like, trauma, losing the mother. Yeah. I just want to throw out, why are all the moms in Star Wars dead or left behind? And also, why isn't she named? Like, we still don't know Hera's mom's name. Like, why? Where are all the mother stories in Star Wars?
Right, that's coming up with what's her name? Doesn't Sabine have a Mando mother?
Yeah.
Power mother?
It's one of the very first stories in Star Wars we had, like, with moms. And that's just insane that we have so few mother stories. Like, because, like, we don't really have a story with Breha. Aunt Beru, we really don't ever get Aunt Beru's story being a mother to Luke. Because I don't care what anybody fucking says. Like Lars and Aunt Beru are Luke's parents.
His parents, yeah.
And they're never treated as stuff. Like, they're dead, he's, like, sad, and then he moves on. I'm like, no, they raised you. They are your
parents. Yeah, they were basically his parents, and I think Ben Kenobi would just show up every once in a while to be, like, a Jiminy Cricket-type character.
Yeah, like, they are his parents. And, like, there's just not a lot of, like, mom stories in general. Like, we don't know the name of Tora's mom, who we don't know what happened to her, if she's even alive or dead. We don't know the name of Hera's mom, who is dead. Like, Padme never got to be a mom to her kids. Like there's just not mom stories in Star Wars, but we have all of the daddy issues.
It's all dad stuff,
all the fucking daddy issues. And I'm like, I'm ready for, like, the mom stories of Star Wars. Like, I need the mom stories. And I know there's a little bit. I think it's Bloodlines. And also Leia, Princess of Alderaan. Like, there's, like, scenes there with, like, Leia with her mom. And then I think Bloodlines is, like, is Kylo Ben as a child. And, like, you get to see, like, Leia, like, parenting and stuff. But I haven't read either, so I don't have that context at the moment. So, but give me my mom stories. Moms. My next note is, rest in peace all the Twi'leks that were crushed by the big-ass Imperial ship crash-landing on their village as it careened out of the sky.
Well, my hope was, what I was thinking was, well, it seems like it is a big ass Imperial ship, but as Star Destroyers go, it was kind of a mini Star Destroyer. So I was like, well, hopefully it's crashing over a desert or plains, or it will burn up in the atmosphere enough. I don't know. But after The Force Awakens and the trailer for Rise of Skywalker, it looks like a lot of that stuff just ends up like embedded in the ground. So yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah.
But that would also piss off his people.
Yeah.
Get them riled up like a nest of hornets.
Yeah. So, so a little bit of it, like, me wishes that Numa did more, but a lot of it is that just like such a self-indulgent thing. Like, I love Numa from Clone Wars and stuff like that. I just love that character and her story. But there's just so much going on in the episode. Like, I absolutely understand why they didn't use her more, especially because she was like a minor character from one episode and stuff. So I understand. But I do wish there was like some kind of like little line or something from Numa about like a nod to the clones or to Waxer and Boyle. Like, she didn't have to like give a big backstory. She's like, but something of like Sabine, like, so why do you fight? And she's like, because I was inspired by these two men who saved my life. Like, that's all I needed.
I think the opportunity they had would have for that would be having her meet Rex. Just like, do you remember Waxer and Boyle? You know, that would.
Oh my god! Oh, you know, my god!
If you wanted to exploit that aspect of it, that's what I would have. And he did know Waxer and Boyle, I believe, right?
I know Cody did. They were in Cody's squadron. I don't. Rex might have.
Rex might have been able to say something I heard of him. You know,
he was there when Waxer died. Because right. That was Umbara. I don't think he ever interacted with Boyle though. But he was there when Waxer died. But
who knows? He might have in the mess. They might have been mess hall buddies at some time or something. You know, in the cracks. You know.
Chris, I need to write that fan fiction. I'm doubled over and holding my stomach. Like, that just hurt when you said that. Like, oh my god. Oh my god.
That's how I would exploit that if I was gonna exploit it.
Oh my god. Yeah. So, oh yes, that. And my last note is this is the season for transitional episodes for characters and stuff like that. And this one's kind of a weird one because I feel like it did more than Wings of the Master, what it did for Hera. But at the same time, like, Hera doesn't really change. She just kind of faces her past and her dad. So, like, she didn't really change, but I think she liked having, like, the affirmation from her father.
Right. She's not a character that really needs to have a big... She's pretty set. Like, I'm not saying she's, like, a perfect person, but she's got her shit together to an extent. So her transitory episodes can be a little more... And she gets a couple of them, and they're both kind of just, like, nice little fine tunes in her life where they're both, like... They're both basically like, this character's got her shit together and she's doing her thing. And both of these are sort of her reaping the benefits of it or getting not as much benefits of it, not like getting a promotion or something like that, but more like, you know, getting a little satisfaction with, you know, being acknowledged as a good enough pilot and a good enough daughter.
I just realized, like, unlike someone like Ezra and Sabine, who are like changing by like literally growing up into adults. Like, most of Hera's episodes are like her growing through her career. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Kanan is changing as a person because he's having to deal with, like, you know, like Rex and like his past as a Jedi. Like, and same thing with Zeb, like, he's having to face his past and stuff, and it keeps coming up with Kallus, and we're going to see that a little bit more next week and stuff. Ezra and Sabine are, like, growing up actually into adults, but, like, every time we see Hera in one of these, it's her, like, going through her career. Like, that's her change, really.
Yeah, it's weird. Career is a weird, to me, like, choice of it. It's almost heavy, you know, because she does, like, I mean, it is her career. She's, you know, she's working through the ranks, but I think it's more of a life passion for her, for, you know, the passion for freedom and all of that. So it's almost like a life goal or a commitment to, you know, working towards something. So, yeah.
Yeah. So
it's more than a career. It's definitely got a philosophy, behind it.
Yeah. So, but that's all I really had for this episode. I didn't have anything else. Did you?
Not me. You want me to score it up?
Yeah. Score it up, Chris.
All right. I gave it a 7.5, which means solid episode. You know, it was nice. The character moving, it was nice, but it wasn't like astounding, you know, like it wasn't like a big one, like some of the more, like say the next episode or whatever. So just a good, solid, enjoyable episode with a few really great moments to have a nice, solid 7.5.
That's where I am.
I know we're aligned on it for what I was feeling a little. I was feeling like I'm was going to be scoring it a little low compared to you. And I'm pretty happy to see that we're both right on the same page, literally on the same page, because we're looking at the same document. But
yeah, like I like this episode better than Wings of the Master. It's really great to see these old Clone Wars characters again and getting callbacks to them. I liked watching Hera facing her father, which is really good drama. Awkward Kanan is the best. It was nice to see a new side of Kanan that like we've never seen before, and that's all really, yeah, really fun. And we got to see a little bit of Ezra growth too. Like he got the Jedi mind trick. They have the cool force throwing moment, so it's nice seeing Ezra grow up a little bit more too. So for all, I mean, it's a pretty good episode. Like I would say it's a little, my average is usually a 7. I think it's a little bit better than a 7, so I give it a 7.5 out of 10.
I'd probably lean a little more into liking Wings of the Master better, just because it was a little more novel. You know, you had a new character and a neat location and a kind of fun idea, you know, to it. So it was just visually and beat wise a little funkier than this one. But I might have actually scored, yeah, I probably did score that one like an 8 or something like that. But
we'll have to see. I keep meaning to make a note of it, because like we're getting close to our season 2 wrap up, and I keep meaning to note of like this is the season of like transitional episodes, who had the biggest change, and I want to make sure, like I want to talk about that when we wrap up season 2. So I hope we remember.
I think I know, but I want to watch all the episodes before I make that call again, because it's been a while since I watched it.
How I feel about that, because I think you could argue between 2 to 3 different characters who had the biggest growth. But they're all for very different reasons. And that's where my argument comes, because, like, Ezra's gone through a lot this season.
Between, right, like, but
his parents
think
and stuff like that.
We should make a distinction between, like, transitional, like, a transitional episode is, like, sort of, like, what happens to that character, like, that transition from that story in that episode, and then there's a transition over the course of a season.
Yeah.
Or something, too. So, we'll figure that out when we get to it.
Yeah, because, like, I'm stuck between, like, Kanan, Ezra, and kind of Zeb and Sabine are in there a little bit too, but I feel like whoever had the most change over the course of the season is going to be between Kanan and Ezra, but both for like very, very, very different reasons. And so whoever had the most, I'll have to sit down and like look at the season.
So yeah, I got Zeb in there on that list too, so I got more of a 3-way battle. So we'll see. We'll know by the end.
Yeah, because I think Sabine has 2, so like I think Sabine's in that mix. Hera's Chopper's not.
Yeah.
Also, I would also argue Callus, we're about to see next week.
Oh, yeah.
Callus might have the biggest change of the season. So it could go several different.
See, my 3-way battle actually might be between Callus, Sabine, and Zeb rather than Ezra and Kanan.
Mine would probably be Ezra, Kanan, and Callus, but it's the 3 characters that changed the most. Yeah. So It's going to be interesting, but we're not at the season two recap yet, so.
Yep.
I cannot wait for, like, my Callus evolution.
Oh, jeez.
So, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially if you give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It helps people find the show. So if you like us and you want more people to listen to us, please go over to, I think it's Apple Podcasts now, find our show and give us a 5-star review, and we'll read it on the show. This week, our feedback comes from Facebook for our episode, Future of the Force, when we had our guest Sean from Roll to Fail with us. Just so you know, Chris.
Great and hilarious guest. He was a riot to have on the show. I'm looking forward to having him on again.
Yeah. Just so you know, the line separates, the one in the middle is the conversation that we had. So line separates them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I remember this one, even though it was a couple months ago, I actually remember this Facebook exchange. All right, so this first one is from Andrew Gilbertson, and then it has a
reply. No, there's one above it. There's one above it, Aaron's.
Oh, there is. Oh, yeah. So, okay, I almost missed it. One from Aaron Henley. It's so short. It's just like, oh, those poor Inquisitors. They have no idea what they're dealing with now. Yep, they're chumps, I think.
I miss the Inquisitors. Poor chumps. I miss the Inquisitors.
Cannon fodder. All right, so this one's from Andrew Gilbertson, which I'm saying, welcome, I'm mixing his two names up into Albert. Andrew Gilbertson, for your first letter in, so I don't have a voice for you yet. All right. What was the name of this episode again?
This is Future of the Force. This was the one where Ahsoka showed up.
This is Future of the Force, okay.
Yeah, it had, like, the babies, and Ahsoka fought the Inquisitors.
Oh, right, in the apartment building. All right, so Andrew Gilbertson says, this episode is a.k.a. Ahsoka has nothing to do with the story, but swoops in and nabs the climax because that's what she does in Rebels. This episode is the climax of her, quote, shouldn't this story be about the main cast, unquote, spotlight stealing? Well, Hope and I disagree.
Yeah.
I mean, you could take it as spotlight stealing, but what my reply was, with the main cast comprising 95% of the story and the entire run of the show, I'm okay with a favorite character grabbing the spotlight now and then. I kind of like it. Fictional cartoon life isn't always fair, which is just like real life. So I guess, you know, I'm not looking for them to evenly or equitably pass out the you know, who gets to win in everyone. I'm pretty happy with the thing is, they're bringing Ahsoka back. Everybody kind of wanted to see her get some time in kicking somebody's ass, and
that was a big deal too, because that was the first time she drew her new lightsabers.
Yes.
And if we're going to talk about, like, spreading everything evenly, then can we be mad about how Zeb pretty much gets no story from season 3 on? Like, Zeb doesn't have any really good episodes past season 3. And after Callus becomes a Fulcrum agent, Callus has no story in season 4. So if we're really going to, like, nitpick that, I mean, the show becomes the Ezra Sabine show, season 3 and 4. Doesn't really get anything. Zeb doesn't get anything. Callus doesn't get anything. And they're main characters. So I'm not mad about this, because I'm more upset that the rest of the main cast gets really shunted season 3 on.
Yes, they definitely shift gears in there. Oh, and then Hope, in reply to what I said, I agree. She was agreeing with me. Hope was agreeing with me. Mm-hmm. Kanan and Zeb, she said, Kanan and Zeb were knocked out, and the last one standing
excuse
was...
Excuse you. Where's my voice?
Oh, sorry. Oh, God. What am I thinking? Okay.
I know.
Hope says, I agree. Kanan and Zeb were knocked out, and the last one standing was Ezra with a baby. The Padawan was about to face down two fully trained Inquisitors. If Ahsoka hadn't showed up, they probably would have all died. Which would have been a sucky end to Rebels if most of the main cast died. There was that good.
What? Yeah, and what you don't see, I actually originally wrote a much longer, snarkier tweet and or response, and I sent it to Chris, and I toned it down.
Well, I don't know. I didn't feel too salty about what he said, but I mean, I can understand why people would feel like that, but myself personally, I was looking for, you know, and I don't know, my investment in it might be way more because you and I have spent about what, 400, 500, 600 hours discussing Ahsoka and her character. So by the time, you know, she shows back up in Rebels, we're raring to go, you know.
Yeah. And
not only
it,
am
like,
I willing to raring to go seeing it on the show, but I'm raring to go because we get to talk about it on the episode. So
yeah, and I have to admit, like, I was salty at first because, like, Ahsoka just means personally so much to me, so I'll fight anybody for Ahsoka.
Right.
And, like you can listen to my episode of, like, Lipstick and Lightsabers where I told my Star Wars story. Like, Ahsoka Tano saved my life. So once I actually kind of took it, I wrote down my initial thoughts, and then I sat on them, which is, like, what, something I feel like people should do more on the internet in general. So I wrote down my official thoughts, I sat on them, and then I calmed down and I reread the message, and I was like, okay, I can see where this person is coming from. So then I didn't put in my salt, and I rewrote a thing once I thought about it and calmed down from my initial thoughts.
Yeah, I thought we both addressed it. You from a more direct story point of view, and me from just more of a general, like, I see enough of the rest of the main cast.
Yeah, so
I want me some Ahsoka.
So I also, like, don't mind if, because I actually had this talk with Sean in private and stuff like that. Sean, who was our guest for this episode, we were talking about different characters and stuff like that, and, like, he said something about another character that I love. I don't remember what it was, and I was just like, you don't understand what this character means to me. And so it's like, I can also understand, like, if Ahsoka's not your favorite character, how it can come across like that, because, like, And so, like, everybody's entitled to their opinions, but, like, in the context of the story, if Ahsoka hadn't come, they would have died. Like, that would have been the end of Kanan, Zeb, and Ezra. They would have died. And so that's why I didn't see it as scene stealing to me. But Andrew, please send us more, like, comments. Like, don't, like, you are very much entitled to disagree with us, and we would love to read it if you do.
Yeah, and if you have any insight into what kind of voice you would like me to give you, I'll give you a voice. I only have one reply to go on now, so my voices are kind of random. They don't really have anything to do with,
yeah,
except for Patrick Delmore's, which is just sort of the exact opposite of his voice.
Yeah, I don't even know where you got Paul C. Kelly from, or him being just, like, a cool guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we just think Paul C. Kelly's cool, so we want to make his voice cooler. Speaking of which, we have one from Paul C. Kelly.
Ooh, yeah.
So Paul C. Kelly says, good thing the Inquisitors do not have Hondo on their side. Oh, no. Hondo would know to go straight to the air ducts because he knows from experience. Oh, yeah, he's seen all those episodes. Jedi's always crawl through the ventilation shafts. Yes, they do. This was a bit cooler seeing this again after having read the Ahsoka novel. Looks like the Inquisitor 5 and 7 are at least a little more powerful than number 6, who was taken out in about 2 seconds.
Such a cool moment.
What two?
Oh, such a cool moment, because that's how Ahsoka got her new lightsabers, was she killed Inquisitor number 6 in the Ahsoka novels, and then she, like, took his kyber crystals and looked at them and was just like, oh my god, you're in pain, and she, like, purifies them, and she heals them, and that's how she gets her two new lightsabers, and that's why they're white, so, We didn't choose our candy again.
No. Well, we've got a smaller selection every week.
Yep.
Let's do the Cree-Cree. Cree-cree.
Oh, hey, I just picked that up. So,
Cree-cree.
If you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's a weirdo. And our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review. And Dario is Chris's co-host for Eat and Beat a Podcast. And this week we're doing the Cree-cree, which is from Bolivia.
Bolivia, from where my good friend Anna is from, Bolivia. I like Cree-cree because it sounds like it should be a nickname for me.
Cree-cree.
Like a stupid nickname that I wouldn't want anybody to call me.
I'll forget this next time I record, but I would like to think the next time I answer your Skype call, I'd be like, hey, what's up, Cree-cree?
Cree-cree!
But I'll forget.
Oh my god, there's writing on the Cree-cree. What does it say?
Oh my god! If you're a Kri-Kri, does that make me a ho-ho?
Oh, no. That isn't a candy, though. That's a snack. Or a garden tool.
Mm. Okay. Oh, God.
Oh, it's like crunch. I thought it was going to be filled with with caramel.
I love crunch bars because I love like crispy. I love Rice Krispies and candy. That's one of my favorite things.
The crunches in this one look big. They look bigger than Rice Krispies, but they're not as crunchy. It's good.
Sorry, I'm so happy right now. I love crispiest things and candy. I'm gonna eat me one more of these.
The Kri-Kri is a success.
I'm just ooming. I'm so happy right now. It's been a week. I needed some chocolate. And this was a fuck up of an episode, so.
Oh, I've gotten my chocolate in this week. I've been eating lots of chocolate ice cream cones at work, and I got some dollar store thin mints here in my room, but this is perfect. And it doesn't weigh 5 pounds like the last few candy bars that we've done that were monsters.
Well, that's all I have. Do you have anything else?
No, ma'am.
Oh, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at our Two True Freaks website, which is twotruefreaks.com, startlingly enough. That's where we release all our podcasts. You can sign up for an RSS feed there to subscribe to them, or you can subscribe on iTunes, however the hell they're doing it now. We have a Facebook presence. We've got the Two True Freaks podcast site where you can see all our podcasts also. And we have the Two True Freaks Cantina where you can go talk to all the Two True Freaks listeners and Two True Freaks podcasters, which we have a plethora of. Plethora. I had cancer the plethora once. I had to have my plethora removed. Anyway, Oh my God. I almost skipped one of the most important components of where can you find me or us, and that is on Twitter with the legendary undisputed champion of the world running our Twitter feed, Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene.
Classic.
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta go back to the classic. Then I panicked and I couldn't think of anything.
He's not only posting all the podcasts, he's listening, so if you're a listener, you know you're listening along with Gene. No matter what Two True Freaks podcast, you can sit there and look over at the seat next to you, and there'll be Gene listening to it. Except he'll be moving really slowly because Gene is in a different time frame where he's listening at like quadruple speed or something.
I just realized for that segment where I sing Gene's song, I should just start grabbing like random things on my desk and just smacking them.
Gene. People see Gene like the hummingbird sees the world, just in slow motion. But that's where you can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuys and Jedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinex on Twitter. I have a website called geekygirlexperience.com. I just wrote a review for Thrawn Treason. Oh, I didn't even talk about my blue husbando because the new Thrawn book came out last week. I didn't like Thrawn Treason, and I'm very upset about it. And I went into a lot more detail of my problems I had with Thrawn Treason over on geekygirlexperience.com. The article is called, Thrawn Treason is just fine, but it's not really needed.
And, I think in the future on JGuys and Jedi, we should carve out a little spot for you to talk about some Thrawn Treason.
Yeah, well, honestly, it's going to come, it takes place in the middle of season 4, so because I already planned between season 3, before season 3, doing a touch on just like a kind of like a quick recap of the First Thrawn book, and then between 3 and 4 doing a recap, because I still haven't talked about the present day stuff of Thrawn alliances. We covered the post Clone Wars stuff of it, but I haven't touched that one because it takes place between season 3 and 4.
Right.
And so I'll probably definitely like go into like the plot of Thrawn Treason when we get to that point in season 4. But like the actual book, I go into way more detail about it in my article over on geekygirlexperience.com, but it boils down to, it just really depends on what you're looking for in a Thrawn book. Like, it's if you like battle math, if you like really like intricate space battles and stuff like that, like, you're gonna like that book. But for me, like, I don't
that, yeah, that's plot. Not your that's not your focus though.
How about this? Let me read you just a little touch of the article. Let me find it. Where is it? Because, well, for one, the promotion of the book was a lie. What they actually promoted the book as was not the actual book. It was a completely different book. So that was my first pet peeve. But just like little things like battle math. Like, and so here it is. There are huge chunks of this book that are just battle math. If precise space battles, coordinates, vector talk, and stuff like that is your jam, then you're gonna get a huge kick from this book. But for me, it felt like I was back in math class again. If 6 TIE fighters are slingshot over the Chimera at this degrees and speed while heading towards these vectors, then 12 TIE fighters come out of hyperspace in the vector at this degrees and speed, with the invisible cloaked cylinder drifting through real space at this speed, which will hit the Grist ship first? The answer is, I don't care. and that was so much of the book. Like, there would just be pages upon pages upon pages of battle math. Not just, like, in the climax, like, throughout the entire fucking book. And I just don't care.
Right.
And my other, like...
You want to know about the battle map of Thrawn's soul and mind.
Yeah, and there's just, like, little weird character things, like... So, like, why I loved 2015 Thrawn so much is that we were in so much in Thrawn's head. So you can, like, watch him deduce things. But you're barely in Thrawn's head, especially like in the pivotal epilogue scene, which is the setup of the finale of Rebels. Like, that could have fixed the entire fucking book for me. Like, Eli, who is like such a big part of Thrawn 2015, really doesn't do anything with Thrawn. I don't even know if they're friends anymore. I don't know. And like, there's just so many, like, and pretty much it's a rehashing of Thrawn Alliances. Thrawn Alliances and Thrawn Treason are this exact same book. They have the exact same plot. And I know people are going to be like, nuh-uh, no it doesn't. Well, here, I wrote this in my article too. Thrawn Alliances basically went like this. Vader, Thrawn, you're a traitor. Thrawn, no I'm not, I serve the Empire. Vader, but your people are here, traitor. Thrawn, I can help both the Empire and my people. We'll defeat the Grisk and the true traitor like this, insert battle math, and here's how I did it. Insert Sherlockian tropes here, see? I'm not a traitor. And then Vader says, I guess you're fine then, but I still don't like you. Thrawn to the Emperor. See, Your Highness, I'm still good. Palpatine. Oh, you, I got my eye on you. Now go do your thing and we'll figure it out later. Now, reader, replace all the Vaders with Ronin. And it's the exact same plot. Thrawn and Treasons were the same plot. The only difference is in detail. Like, it's the same book. It's the same plot. It didn't do anything new. We didn't find out anything big fucking massive thing. So, like, I went to like, a lot of detail about, like, my issues with Thrawn Treason, which is probably my least favorite of the 3 canon books. I loved the first Thrawn book. Thrawn Alliances was a fucking riot. Like, I don't think Zahn set out to write a comedy, but he did. It's a comedy. It's Anakin and Thrawn pissing each other off, and then Thrawn trolling Vader for 300 pages. Like, it's a funny book. It's hilarious. I laughed every chapter. And Treason is just bland and boring and full of math, and I don't care. And so it just didn't do anything. There is no treason in Treason. The book is called Thrawn Treason, and there's no treason. Like, there's no treason in the title. I don't understand. Oh, I'm so mad. Also, you can find me on Archive of Our Own.
I was just going to ask you where you can find it, Hope.
You can also find me on Archive of Our Own, where I write fan fiction. One being the Lucky Leku, which you can hear the first 2 chapters here on Jaguars and Jedi.
And the other being a Thrawn story that she likes better.
Yeah. Anyway. Oh my god, though, next week is my big
feelings are coming next week, Hope, so everybody buckle down.
Oh, guys, we're gonna go into my ship. It's my big gay episode. I'm so excited. It's my Catalyst Ebb episode. I'm honestly about to get off here with Chris and go start writing the outline because we're recording it tomorrow.
We're doing it tomorrow, so you don't have to wait. You guys have to wait a week, though.
Yeah, we don't have to wait, so I'm about to actually go do that right now. So have fun next week. All aboard. Ahoy! All aboard the gay ship next week. Let's go!
Help's getting real gay next week.
That's my ship sound. You can't see it, but I'm saluting the gay ship. Salute.
Hong Kong.
Hong Kong. All aboard the Calzeb. Yay. Calzeb. You know, I'm actually planning to write a Calus article because I do think that I love Calzeb, but it's also a problematic ship at times, which when it comes to like Calus's past and stuff. But it really boils down to, and I talked about this before, Rebels does not give us the middle in chunk of Calus's story, so we don't get to see his redemption, we just have to take it at face value. So that's something I plan to write when I have time, is about the character of Calus and how the writing of Rebels failed Calus. Calus. But I love him.
Alright.
Bye!
Get ready for some gay interspecies headcanon from Hope next week.
Oh, I love aliens. I just want to fuck them.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2. You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too. Thanks for listening. And join us every Monday for new episodes of Two True Freaks.
Dario! 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 Wake up! Dario! 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 Wake up!
Oh, sorry, man. Sorry.